For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Season 17,
Episode 30.
This is Writing Excuses, Dialogue Masterclass, Episode 3, Know Your Characters.
15 minutes long.
Because you're busy.
And we're
because you're
dumb.
In a hurry. because you're busy.
It's okay. It's about knowing your characters, not right. The tagline.
Right.
I am Dan.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Maurice.
I'm Howard.
And you are both busy and in a hurry, so let's get right into this. We want to talk about knowing your characters. You want to write good dialogue, you got to know who's speaking. So how do we get to know our characters, Maurice?
Well, I tend to think of it in terms of, you know, sort of mining out their exterior versus mining out their interior. So it's like, so when I think of exterior, I think of like physical things about them in terms of like their age or let's see. Well, yeah, just age and physical characteristics, you know, things like that, the go into, and in fact, like nationality, origins, culture, you know, those I consider sort of external elements to the character, as opposed to their interiority, which is, you know, how do they think? How do they feel? What are their philosophies? Or what are the internal forces that guide them? And I'm fascinated with this whole idea of what Howard talked about earlier about the DTR. So I was hoping he'd jump right in right about now.
Well, let me say this. If you were going to define, if you're going to try and write dialogue that sounds like Howard, a couple of the character attributes that I consciously try to apply to myself are, I am more inclined to make fun of myself than to make fun of other people. And I never make fun of other people unless I know them and can and know that they can tell that I am joking. And so if you were to write Howard dialogue where Howard says something really mean-spirited to someone he just met, that would sound out of character. And so that's the sort of thing, you know, it doesn't matter that I'm 54 years old or weigh 230 pounds and am unhappy with weighing two. None of that matters with the dialogue. What matters is how am I going to speak to other people in a way that sounds true to who I am.
There's a thing in the Regency, which longtime listeners will have heard me say before, that manners are an outward expression of your opinion of others. And one of the things about dialogue is that it is an outward expression. So when you are having two characters speaking to each other, when your character is speaking, what they are revealing is their own attitudes and thoughts. It's not just, it is a way of exposing how they are perceiving those around them, not just by what they're saying, but by the way that they are saying it. And I've stopped the conversation completely. Perfect.
I'm just thinking, I'm processing all of that. So it's one of those things where it's like, all right, I'm start off with the Howard thing, because I'm like, man, what would it be like to write Maurice as a character? And so that's been like a weird mental exercise, because it's like, all right, so I am Black. Spoilers for anyone who didn't know that, by the way. And so that is going to affect how I operate in certain contexts. Or it shouldn't, but it does in a lot of ways, because I mean, even right now, there's a light version of that going on right now. Even though I'm friends with all of you, I'm also in podcast performance mode, as opposed to I'm hanging out with my boys mode, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's that aspect, which is feeding it into how I'm coming across you know, in terms of what I'm saying. But then there's the internal stuff that's going on too, you know, with the stuff that informs me in terms of, you know, what are my aspirations? What are my insecurities? You know, and that's going to weigh in how I frame certain things, how I want to come across versus how I do come across. Right. So that's that balance of the interior and exterior that I was talking about.
And there's a collision between that information and what Mary Robinette has described as authorial intent in the Shafters Shifters cozy mysteries I'm writing. I have five main characters. You know, it's an ensemble, and often all five of them are in the room with someone else. And I have to remember that authorial intent, I want to move the story forward here, intersects the fact that each one of these characters may have a question that there's information that they need, or there's an objective that they're after, and they will interrupt. They will participate in the conversation. They will turn it from a dialogue into a trialogue or a quadalogue or whatever. I'm breaking the word dialogue. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have done that. But it gets very confusing because when you have that many voices, if they're not distinct, you have to start using dialogue tags. And now the page gets cluttered. And now it starts to slow down. And now I flip back to authorial intent and ask myself, do I get to override what I know those characters want in order to make this scene function the way I want it to function? It's challenging.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mary.
No, you go ahead.
Well, so one of the things, along those lines then, I think there's one part where we are figuring out that character, each individual character, you know, what they want, you know, in terms of what they want to accomplish in the story, what they're trying to, you know, figure out, that sort of thing. But there's also that type, you have to sort of like figure out what is their relationship to each other character also. It's almost like a separate column, right? Uh-oh.
There's a kitty.
There is one. She can always sense when I'm on a podcast.
It's perfect. So this is another great example of dialogue and how when you're trying to get to know a character, sometimes having them interrupted by something unexpected is a way to expose stuff about a character. Dialogue is rarely totally linear. So sometimes having something happen, like a random cat walking through or having a waiter interrupt a conversation, can help shift the conversation, can also help you understand more about that character. The going back to something that Maurice... For instance, Maurice, when confronted with the cat, reaches down and pets the cat. Howard, when confronted with a beeping alarm, has walked away from his microphone and into another room. Both of these things expose different things, not only about the interruption, but about the way the character reacts to that. So,
and now I am going to interrupt all of you.
Fine. I mean, well, of course, Dan, please do what you must.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Making your mental health a priority is always a challenge. And I think it's easy to not prioritize it, especially when you're trying to figure out how to write a book. I think we have some deep cultural idea that artists should be tortured and depressed to make their best work. But in my experience, struggling to find clarity and motivation will hurt your process a lot more than help it. In my own life, therapy has been essential to figuring out how to navigate an industry seemingly designed to give all of us anxiety. Being able to talk to an expert can help you set better boundaries, find a balance between the demands of your work and your art, and navigate the complexities of being a published writer. That said, finding a therapist is never easy, especially if you're not in a major city like I am. That's where a service like BetterHelp can be of use to help you start the process while you figure out what your needs are for your mental health journey. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/WX today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, BetterHelp.com/WX.
Maurice, what's our book of the week?
Our book of the week is, was it The Ballad of
Perilous Graves.
Thank you. This cat is all over the place right now. and so it's by Alex Jennings, and I just started this book, but I am falling in love with this book. It's New Orleans. It's music. It's magic. Alex really put his foot in it, which is a good thing. trust me on that. But it's just this, you have this world of magic that's going on, and I'm sorry, this cat is killing me right now. But I've just started this book. I'm falling in love with what Alex has done in terms of creating the magic and tying it in with music in this world.
So that's The Ballad of Perilous Graves by Alex Jennings. And what's the name of your cat?
Ferb.
Ferb. Oh, that's great.
Is in Phineas and Ferb.
Yeah. At some point during this, we will be visited by Elsie as well. So I want to tie us back into to some concrete tools based on something that Maurice talked about in the first episode, which is thinking about questions to ask about your character. I talked about the interiority of the character, you know, their manner exposing what they think about other people, but the way they express themselves is not just that attitude; it is also about their culture, their nationality, their class, their age, what their home language is, language or languages. So if you think about those things when you're sitting down to approach that dialogue, Patrick Stewart is going to say things in a very, very different way than Woody Harrelson. Wait, did I just get the actor's name right?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Good job, me.
You did. Assuming you were talking about Woody Harrelson.
Yes, I was. But they have enormously different approaches to the way they would say something. Dan, one of the things that I love about the way you handle dialogue and characterization in the John Cleaver books is with Marcy and the way we can tell who is kind of present at any given moment. Do you want to talk about some of the tools you use for doing that?
Oh, boy. First of all, thank you. I assume you're referring most specifically to books 4 and 5.
Yes.
In which Brooke is essentially possessed not by an actual spirit or person, but by a vast backlog of memories that have been downloaded and different ones will take over her personality at different times. I gave her, first of all, a set number of people who would be in charge. Typically we will get Brooke, we will get Nobody, who was a demon. We will get, I can't remember the name, but there was a medieval woman, who appears a few times, and then eventually Marcy shows up. And so knowing your characters, knowing who the main personalities were going to be, helped me to give them specific, quirks, different speech patterns. We have the two modern girls, Brooke and Marcy, who I'd already written several books about and I knew them well, and they were very different people. Then we had the medieval one, who of course spoke in a different way. She had a child. She had very different life experiences than the other, and that allowed her to speak in, you know, use different words, notice different things about the world, ask questions about the world because she came from a different time, things like that. And then, of course, the demon, Nobody, who is, you know, again, someone that I had known fairly well. She is very acerbic, very biting, very aggressive, but also incredibly and deeply broken and kind of flawed as a person. She hates herself, and that's kind of the root of the whole problem that drives the whole series for about 3 books in a row. And so making sure that they all had these very distinctly different ways of viewing the world meant that as soon as one of them popped up, they had a different relationship with John. So they would refer to him by different names, or they would use, you know, different tags, different vocabulary when they were talking to him, when they were talking about him. They would ask different kinds of questions, and that made it relatively easy, you know, after the giant amount of work that you put in. Then it's relatively easy to use those tools once you've built them and put them on the wall to say, oh, well, this is clearly Marcy who's talking right now.
Yeah. So just to recap, what we're talking about there is knowing the background of your character and also, generally speaking, their attitude or I guess, emotional state at any mm-hmm. given moment.
Yes.
Yeah, which is why when I'm building characters, you know, I'm always trying to focus in, not always, but there's like a series of questions I tend to ask each of my characters, you know, like, what is your dream? What was a traumatic experience? What's your greatest fear? You know, these sort of questions, so I can just get a feel for who they are. And then, you know, in essence, you know, writing dialogue boils down to knowing your character so well that you can drop them into any situation and you're just going to know how they're going to respond. You know how they're going to speak in that given situation. So,
yeah, I have found lately, and there's actually, we could talk about this for an hour, and so I will give you the truncated version. Most of what I have written over the past several years and everything that I have published over the last several years has been audio drama scripts rather than prose novels. And that has caused me to think about dialogue differently. Not that I have learned new things that make my novels different or better. In fact, it often is more difficult. You know, when you're writing an audio drama, there are no dialogue tags. You are relying on different voice actors to convey the idea that this is a different person. And so there's no tags, there's no narrative, you know, no editorializing, he said suspiciously, things like that. Some of the little tricks that we use when we're writing prose, I absolutely can't do when I'm writing scripts. And so being forced to strip the dialogue down, removing all context from it, removing all commentary from it, so it is just words and voices and nothing else, actually made it hard to come back to novels because I'd forgotten how to do some of that stuff, but also really forced me to get into their heads and make sure that when you heard somebody speak, it was different words. I had to find other identifiers aside from dialogue tags and adverbs and so on and so on.
And this is a really great thing to underline here. Prose dialogue and scripted dialogue, anything with an actor, are not the same thing. It's two different tool sets. It's not just that you can't use the things in prose to go into scripts. It's that when you are writing for an actor, they're going to do some of the lifting for you. You can give them a line that it would be ambiguous on the page and trust that they will have done their character homework and come to it and give it a spin. Like, you can just say what, and they can find five different ways to say it, one of which is going to be completely appropriate for the character. But if you just put the word what on the page, there's so much ambiguity there that it's not, you know, it's the kind of thing that you can maybe do deeper into a novel when the reader is doing that lifting for you. But it's not something that you can get away with in a short story or at the beginning of a book where the reader doesn't yet know that character. And so learning, I've seen a number of things that I've gotten from an early career writer where it's clear that they have learned their dialogue from watching media, because because of all of the ambiguity that's inherent in it, because it doesn't, because it's dialogue that would work great for an actor because you've left space for the actor to do their job, but it doesn't work on the page because there's no one there to provide that context for you.
And with that, we're going to go into our homework. And our homework is me today. And this is something that I have talked about before, but it is something that I still do all the time. When you're trying to figure out who a character is, write a monologue. Pick one of the characters that you're working on in a work in progress or something like that, and write something. I have done job interviews. I have done just straight, let me tell you who I am. Let that character talk for a page or two and just tell you about themselves. This doesn't have to be part of the story. It can just be the character speaking, breaking the fourth wall, telling you what kind of character they are. Whatever it is, write a monologue in which a character talks about themselves and let that kind of use that to discover the character and get to know them better. This is Writing Excuses. You are out of excuses. Now go write.
For this episode of Writing Excuses, your hosts were Dan Wells, Mary Robinette Kowal, Maurice Broaddus, and Howard Taylor. It was engineered by Daniel Thompson and mastered by Alex Jackson. To find more of Writing Excuses and support us, check out patreon.com/writingexcuses.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.